Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world. To complete the record, the historic secret meeting between President Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill lasted 3 days, around last Sunday. The president's ship was the USS Augusta. Winston Churchill was aboard one of Britain's largest and newest battleships, the Prince of Wales. And London reports sadly that weather conditions were not ideal. Perhaps fortunately for the conference, both Mr. Roosevelt and Mr. Churchill, though, are old sailors, and there is no hint that the bounding of the deep upset them. French discontent with the Hitler New Order and with Vichy is growing. The German general who commands the Nazi armed forces in France has today been forced to that confession with this declaration. From now on, the whole population of occupied France will be held responsible if there are any more so-called communist outbreaks. Death will be the penalty for anyone caught engaging in rebel activity in France, and any Frenchman found with any anti-German literature will be given 15 years in jail. The French people, it seems, have answered in their own way Marshal Pétain's plea for more complete collaboration. In just a minute, we will hear the voices of our reporters speaking from abroad. But first, here is a brief message from our sponsors.
Has this been one of those long, tiring days that sometimes leave you feeling in a frazzle? Perhaps you worked too hard today trying to get the week's business caught up, or maybe a hurried lunch has caused acid indigestion or upset stomach. These common ailments are anything but pleasant, I know. So what you want is quick, pleasant relief, the kind Alka-Seltzer can give. Yes, Alka-Seltzer can ease the aching and tiredness of weary muscles, and it can settle acid indigestion and upset stomach in short order. So relax a while and help yourself to sparkling, speedy relief. Alka-Seltzer is pleasant to the taste, and it is not a laxative. Keep some handy all the time. And now, the news of the world.
First, we will begin our roundup of foreign capitals with the latest news from the Near and Middle East. Here is a broadcast from Ankara, Turkey.
Hello, NBC. This is Martin Agroski calling from Ankara, Turkey. The Italians today won the first round of their struggle with the British for the Turkish decision to enable the 11,000-ton Italian ex-naval auxiliary tanker, the Trevisio, to proceed through the Dardanelles and the Straits to the Black Sea. The Turks today released the Trevisio from the Turkish control station at Çanakkale, where it had been held for the past 5 days. It's understood the Turkish decision was based on the fact that there is no clause in the Montreux Conventions which entitles the Turks to forbid passage to a vessel like the Trevisio, which, though listed until some time ago as an Italian naval auxiliary, is now represented as an ordinary merchant ship. I learned the Italians have been notified that in future no ships that were on their naval list at the beginning of the war can pass through the strait, even though they may later have blossomed forth as peaceful merchantmen. The British, though they admit defeat on the initial Italian claim to the Treviso's passage, believe they may win the second round when the Italian ship comes back from the Black Sea to the Aegean, an RAF bomb or a British submarine torpedo launched from outside Turkish territorial waters may put a most conclusive end to the Treviso's quick-change career. The Anglo-Soviet assurances to Turkey still provide the main subject of comment for the Turkish press, which today again advises all and sundry that if the assurances are regarded elsewhere as guarantees, the Turks emphatically do not accept them as such. The idea that they are in need of guarantees is not accepted by the Turks, and no one here seems to give thought to the possibility of Turkey being attacked. A number of other nations bordering on Germany's frontiers, old or acquired, have found to their cost that not talking of war is no guarantee against aggression. The Turks, however, remain happy with their policy of see no evil, hear no evil, and speak no evil. But it still takes two sides to play the friendly neighbor game. That's all the news from Turkey. This is Martin Agronsky returning in out of the National Broadcasting Company.
Next, let's listen to our reporter in London, who will tell us of happenings in the British Empire.
This is London at about 19 minutes past midnight. It's quiet here again tonight. There are no reports of British activity in the air today. The second ferry plane disaster of this week, and the one in which Mr. Arthur Purvis, head of the British Purchasing Commission in the United States, was killed, will be closely investigated. The two crashes in so short a space of time, involving people so valuable, will no doubt be deeply probed. The report that Wing Commander Douglas Bader is safe as a prisoner in France was welcome news. You'll remember him as that man of indomitable will, the squadron leader of the fighter command, with many victories officially credited to his guns, and many more to his credit, but not officially. He's the man who lost both legs in an air crash some time ago, and despite that handicap, has been in the thick of the fighting in this war. It was assumed that in his parachute drop when he bailed out over France, what he would probably have described as his undercarriage must have been damaged, or at least bent. New equipment has been sent him through the Prisoners of War Department of the British Red Cross. This, by the way, recalls a story. One day, when Wing Commander Barter's squadron was going into action, he bent one of his aluminum underpinnings and getting into a Spitfire. His remark is so typical of the man. "I'm the luckiest pilot in the Air Force," he said. Any ordinary fellow would have broken his leg. Barter quickly unstrapped the bent one, called for a mechanic who straightened it, strapped it back on, and his squadron was off. And that's Douglas Barter. The food ministry today made public the details of an emergency feeding scheme, a shadow larder so comprehensive that it's difficult to see how bombing on any scale whatsoever can leave any section of these islands deprived of food for any serious period of time. We return you now to New York.
Next, for the other side of the war story, let's now hear a report from the other side of the battle line, from Nazi Germany. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Lanius in Berlin. The news of the Roosevelt-Churchill meeting at sea went off the front pages here tonight in favor of German military successes in the East. Tonight's paper still carried comment on the Anglo-American high seas rendezvous, but the general tendency seems to be to belittle the affair and put more stress on what the German armies are doing to the Russians. The meeting is called a propaganda move, and the Churchill-Roosevelt peace aims are compared to the late President Wilson's 14 points. The German radio tonight describes the meeting as a bluff. The press gives a big news parade of the reported encirclement of Odessa and Nikolayev by German and Hungarian troops. There's no indication here that these cities have been taken, but the general impression gained from late messages is that the Russians are in a precarious position. One dispatch tells how a Red Troop ship was set upon by Stukas and left blazing in the Black Sea, south of Nikolayev, which makes it appear that the trapped Soviets are trying to escape by sea. The Germans state that other strong Stuka attacks were carried out today in the region around Charkov. Up in the north, German bombers are reported to have gone after Russian railway system again in daylight raids. In attacks on ground troops, the German Air Force gets credit for destroying 70 motor vehicles and 9 cannon. The only reports from the center front say that the operations in that section are progressing favorably. This afternoon, the Royal Air Force made attacks on the French Channel coast. The Germans claimed that 9 Spitfires were shot down by their fighters and anti-aircraft batteries. One message says that at Boulogne, 20 French civilians were killed and 20 others injured. The Germans maintain that from a military standpoint, the British raids were failures. And that's all I can give you from this capital tonight.
The Russian version of the war news which we have tonight is not entirely inconsistent with the German reports, except, of course, in degree. Moscow admits that the fourth great German offensive against Leningrad is underway, both north and south of the city. But the Soviets say that the red defense lines down near Odessa are holding. When one considers the scant 130 miles that lay ahead of the advancing German column when the big breakthrough into the Ukraine occurred more than a week ago, that statement seems very obviously true. For at that point, the Nazi armored divisions at last reached what should be ideal blitzkrieg country. For the previous month, after their rapid sweep through the plainlands of Poland, the Germans were hindered to some extent by often difficult terrain. The regions south of Moscow and behind Smolensk are mostly a kind of thinly populated land of great scrub forests, of silent marshes, and of literally thousands of small and boggy lakes. Such country, too, also greatly favored the guerrilla tactics of the hard-hitting Russian army. The forests gave the Red soldiers good cover. Tough-fibered communists could lie in the deep marshes and leap to the attack of the heavier German columns with deadly effect. But in the present swing to the south, the German tanks and army supply trucks are now, at least geographically speaking, out on the straightaway at last. The whole of the wide province where they now are is an almost dead level plain. There is hardly a single tree within 100 miles. Any counterattacking which the Russians may now do, they must do head-on. Either in the full blaze of sunlight or without a particle of cover in these nights of the waning moon. On such a battlefield as in the rolling meadowlands of northern France, modern war equipment of the kind the Germans favor is at its best. Old-fashioned cavalry and infantry, no matter how brave, is at the gravest sort of disadvantage. It is also worth noting that by turning the main part of their invading army southward into the Ukraine, as apparently they have done, the Germans have considerably lengthened their possible fighting season. In the area around Leningrad and on the long road to Moscow, the iron fist of the Russian winter begins to close tight near the middle of October. But down by the Black Sea, summer lingers at least a full month longer. The president is still away from Washington, but our capital has hummed today with activity. For the details, here is Earl Godwin, speaking from the newsroom in Washington.
Well, one of the out-of-the-high-seas conference flow quick results. Lord Beaverbrook, Minister of Supply for Britain, is here working like the beaver for whom he's named. They call him that. He saw various officials today, including W. Averill Harriman, who has the odd title of Lend-Lease Expediter. And out of these conferences arises the rumor here that the United States government is cooking up another $10 billion Lend-Lease program, big enough, full enough of munitions to give color and substance to the suspicion here that one of the moves is a planned invasion of the mainland of Europe, Britain crossing the channel in force and landing an invincible army right on Germany's doorstep. Munitions, of course, by your Uncle Sam. We expect the president to be back here by Monday. He and the beaver will undoubtedly get right down to brass tacks on the business of production, bottlenecks, and a lot of other things. Meantime, officials unofficially say that there will be a publication of the joint note Roosevelt and Churchill to Soviet Russia, and Russia's thank you note in reply. And there's also reported undercover moves trying to bring Russia into line with the moral principles in the 8 points of the joint high seas statement. And there are some gumshoe moves going on which seem to indicate all-out aid for Russia. Incidentally, congressional leaders tell me there's going to be considerable grumbling among congressmen if Russia comes up as a full-time partner in the Lend-Lease program. Secretary of Interior Ickes says gas rationing is getting closer and closer. But Senator Andrews of Florida has a resolution abolishing the Office of Oil Coordinator as at present constituted and substituting an oil coordinator's office created by Congress. Reserve Board, Federal Reserve Board, is ready to issue new regulations restricting installment buying of automobiles, refrigerators, and a score of household appliances. The board proposes, for instance, 18 months as the maximum time limit on time sales, and a 30% down payment for automobiles, but 20% on all other articles. But it takes an act of Congress. Among the things that would be affected are motorcycles, ironers, vacuum cleaners, electric dishwashers, and so forth. The House Immigration Committee, again, late today, approved a bill authorizing the deportation of Harry Bridges, West Coast labor leader. The Congress, or the House, last year passed such a bill, but the Senate failed to act on it, and the new bill approved today terms Bridges' presence as hurtful to the nation. And that's all from Washington at this time.
John W. Vandercook will return with a final bulletin in just a moment. Meanwhile, let's look into those weekend plans of yours. Going on a trip? Vacation? Planning to play a lot of golf or tennis or going to see a ball game? Well, you don't want those plans ruined, I know. And boy, how a headache or an upset stomach can ruin them. So be prepared. Be sure you have plenty of Alka-Seltzer tablets handy. Keep them both at home and in your car. Alka-Seltzer is a pleasant, modern way to relief for those common ailments, and it can help you get back on the happy side of life in a jiffy. In fact, it's just about the best good-time insurance I know of. Your druggist has Alka-Seltzer, so get some tonight. And now, a final bulletin.
Buenos Aires, the Italians, it seems, as Rome has often stated, are still looking forward to a long war. Despairing of being able to break the British sea blockade in at least the near future, the Italian government has today sold 16 of its merchant ships to the Argentine government. All of the vessels have been tied up and rusting in the Plata River ever since soon after Italy went into the war. And the forced sale bargain price which Rome is getting is only $10 million for all the 16 ships. The Italian version of the deal is that ship-hungry Italy has made the sale as an Axis move to strengthen friendship with Argentina. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook saying goodbye for Alka-Seltzer. Until this same time on Monday.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.